VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
Friends, we do thank you for joining us on Crosstalk, another critical issue we need to bring to your attention today. There are those who want to undo the freedoms of this nation, and friends, I want to tell you they never sleep. They attack individual liberty, private property, personal privacy, sovereignty, and independence. And if they do not succeed in one form or fashion, they'll take it apart, and they'll put in a brand new wrapper and try all over again, while also trying to convince you that this is for your well-being and it's for the best interest of the world. Well, such is the case with yet another globalist effort where cities from across the nation and around the world are signing up and wanting to be included in efforts that subscribe to the very tenets that we have warned you about so often concerning Agenda 2030. It's a group known as C40. They're a self-described global network of nearly 100 mayors of the world's leading cities that are united in action to confront the climate crisis. It's a direct attack upon meat and dairy consumption, a direct attack upon private vehicle ownership, and so much more. Joining us to expose this effort, we welcome back Alex Newman. You know him as an award-winning international freelance journalist. He's an author, a researcher, an educator, a consultant, senior editor for The New American, co-author of Crimes of the Educators, author of Deep State, The Invisible Government Behind the Scenes, founder of Liberty Sentinel. Alex, thanks for joining us here today on Crosstalk. Hello, Alex. Are you with us?
Oh, sorry about that, Jim. Somehow my phone got muted, but thank you very much for having me.
Very good. Good to have you here. Alex, tell us about the C40. What exactly is it? How long has this been around?
So the C40 is a coalition of city governments and mayors, and they're basically trying to bring the global warming policy agenda down to the city level. It's a very nefarious organization. I first came across it when Donald Trump announced that he was going to leave the Paris Agreement. That was back in, I believe, 2018. And I was at the UN Climate Summit immediately following that. And, oh, boy, they were so mad, to use a funny analogy, they were madder than a wet hen. And the entire conference was just dedicated to how evil Donald Trump was, to how evil the United States of America was, and how dare we become climate criminals. But what happened then was actually you had city governments and state governments and corporations from all across the United States come to this summit and say, we are going to basically do what the Paris Agreement would have required the United States to do. We're just going to do it without the federal government being involved. So this was an effort to kind of bypass what the federal government was trying to do. And they now have recruited huge numbers of cities all across the world, including many of the biggest cities in the world, Mexico City, for example, Sao Paulo, a lot of major American cities, New York, Chicago, New Orleans, my hometown of Miami. And so they're trying to impose these, really, I think the only way to properly describe them is authoritarian, these authoritarian policies that will try to micromanage our lives, our businesses, our economy, our family, under the guise of saving us from climate change. And they've done this really under the radar. They've enlisted all of these city governments without consulting their constituents, without consulting their taxpayers, and they are gaining steam and momentum very, very quickly.
So they have this, and I wondered about that because I wonder how many of these cities, and you mentioned some of them here in the U.S., there's a number of them, but do you believe the people in these cities even know what their leadership is doing, what they have committed their cities to? Did they hold referendums in these cities? And the people said, yes, let's join with this coalition?
They absolutely have no idea. And I happen to know firsthand a little bit about Miami. I don't live in Miami anymore, but it's still my hometown, and I still maintain a lot of contacts. I have my family there. And so there was actually an organization there of grassroots citizens that were determined to stop and expose this. And they have a supposedly Republican mayor. In fact, he just dropped out of the presidential race after he failed to get traction. But they were trying to set up climate debates. They wanted to bring in some scientists so that there could be some public discussion about this. And the city government absolutely refused. There's a lot of other municipalities within Miami-Dade County, same thing. They've joined up with these kinds of initiatives, and they absolutely refused to discuss it in public. There's almost nothing written about it in the local news and in the press. And so they're really doing this behind citizens' backs. And the same is true at the federal level, Jim. Before we went on air, you and I talked briefly about the Inflation Reduction Act. I know we'll get more into that, but they didn't market that as a climate bill or a climate solutions bill. They marketed that as a way to take down inflation.
Right.
Of course, it did the exact opposite, but really it was a global warming or climate change bill. In fact, they repeatedly now have called it the most significant climate bill ever to pass the U.S. Congress. So we're dealing with fraud, deception, lies, and hidden forces. And this becomes very, very obvious whether you're looking at the city level, the state level, or the federal level.
Even Mr. Biden says that this bill was not rightly named as Inflation Reduction Act. We also saw the huge pressure put on Joe Manchin of West Virginia, who caved into the arm twisting that was going on for him. He alone could have put a stop to this.
That's right. That's exactly right. And it's very typical, unfortunately, of what we've come to expect from the federal government. They know people are hurting under inflation. They know people are desperate for this inflation to ease up. You know, we're all dealing with this. We go to the grocery store and groceries are far more expensive than they were, and yet our salaries are not rising commensurately. So they exploited that desire by Americans to see some relief on the inflation front to basically impose these very, very unpopular policies that never would have passed if they had just been honest and told us what they were doing. And so that's what these city governments are doing as well. They're being roped into this. The citizens of these cities really have no idea. You know, they're seeing and they're feeling the effect of the policies. They may not understand where they're coming from, but that's what's happening here. This is deception because these things cannot stand on their own merits. So it's very dangerous what's happening here.
Yeah, it could have been more aptly named the Green New Deal because, in essence, they've adapted the Green New Deal into this Inflation Reduction Act. And matter of fact, I'm looking at the C40's outcomes report, and they're calling it a global Green New Deal.
That's right. And, you know, when the Green New Deal was first floated as a policy idea here in the United States, it went over like a lead balloon.
Right.
I mean, it became a laughing stock. Even Democrats were saying, whoa, you know, that's a little bit too crazy here. We can't do that. In fact, the first policy proposal that came out about this came from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the congresswoman from New York, and it became literally a laughing stock. It talked about, you know, stopping air travel, stopping meat consumption, paying people not to work, even if they could work. It talked about eradicating fossil fuel energy. In fact, I remember shortly after it came out, I interviewed one of the co-founders of Greenpeace, who for a long time was the president of Greenpeace Canada, Dr. Patrick Moore. And he said on camera that if this were to actually be implemented, virtually everybody on Earth would die very quickly, and the survivors would chop down every tree on the planet to try to be able to heat their homes and cook their food. He said this is like a recipe for mass suicide, is how he put it. And yet, the first idea went down in flames, and so they just repackaged it, they tweaked it a little bit, and they called it Inflation Reduction, and now there are hundreds of billions of dollars floating around, distorting the incentives for city governments, county governments, state governments, and businesses, causing a massive decline in the standard of living and a massive assault on our freedoms at every level.
I understand Ron DeSantis has been turning away this money for the state of Florida. They have an agreement called the Future of Urban Consumption in a 1.5 degrees Celsius World. What do we know about this agreement?
So this is a very important document. The fake fact checkers are trying to claim that this is false, but it's actually not false at all. Anybody can go read this document. It's true that this is not an international treaty, but it is a document that outlines various strategies for city governments to try to obey the Paris Agreement, right? The Paris Agreement calls for humanity to keep global warming under 1.5 degrees centigrade, which, you know, just to start off with, is totally preposterous. Nobody understands what would happen to the temperature if we reduce CO2 by X amount. And you can ask, I've asked many of the UN's own scientists this question, and they're always pretty honest. They say, yeah, we really don't know. So the idea that, you know, tinkering with policy is going to reduce the temperature of the planet is flat out ridiculous. But let's accept their basic assumption. They say that if we want to keep warming below 1.5 degrees centigrade, we have to reduce emissions by X amount. And so what this document does is it outlines different scenarios and different strategies that city governments could use to try to keep CO2 levels or emissions from their jurisdictions below the level that would be required under the Paris Agreement. And some of the proposals in there, I encourage people to read this document themselves. It's publicly available. They talk about forbidding meat consumption. They talk about forbidding dairy consumption. They talk about limiting the amount of clothes that people can buy, limiting the amount of travel people can engage in. And so this is a very real document. These are very real policy proposals. You know, how far these city governments around the world will go in implementing them remains to be seen. But this is a very real threat. These are very, very powerful people, and they're not messing around. They fully intend to impoverish us under the guise of saving the planet from this boogeyman of global warming.
You know, I've read some of those that have kind of whittled out some of these factors you were just talking about, but can't fly more than one time every 3 years, eliminate private car ownership from fossil fuel to electric, limit each person to 3 new items of clothing per year, reducing calorie consumption to 2,500 calories a day. Crazy stuff, Alex.
It is. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that you might think of in, you know, the Soviet Union. All right, comrade, you've had your 2,500 calories for the day. No more food for you. It's absolutely bonkers. And I suspect that if this were to be implemented in an American city, even a very liberal American city, people would say, wait a minute here. Who agreed to this? I didn't sign up for this. So they're certainly going to have quite a mission trying to impose this on us. But the reality is, this is the kind of policy that these totalitarians are imposing. And it will do absolutely nothing to stop the climate from changing. The climate has been changing since God created the planet. But what it will do is it will make it much more difficult to adapt to changes in the climate that come about naturally, very regularly, right? The temperature of the Earth has constantly been going up and down throughout human history, throughout Earth's history. That will continue. And, you know, 100 years ago, when a hurricane would hit, when an earthquake would hit, when a tornado would hit, these things were absolutely devastating because we didn't have the wealth and the prosperity and the fossil fuel infrastructure to be able to ease that burden. And if these policies were to be implemented, we would go back to these sort of natural disasters that have always been with us becoming real catastrophes that result in widespread loss of life.
Yeah, and I think of these mayors who are signing their cities on for this, and it's like, don't you know that if you follow through and do the things that that these documents call for, you're actually going to destroy your city? Or is that the goal, Alex?
I do believe that there is an effort to impoverish our population, not just in the United States, but around the world. You know, they're telling the Africans now, you can't extract fossil fuels, you can't build power plants if they don't run on, you know, solar panels and stuff like this. And so this would really destroy civilization. I don't think your average person today understands how abundant and plentiful energy has liberated humanity from backbreaking labor, right? I mean, the energy contained in a gallon of hydrocarbon energy frees up thousands of human labor hours, right? So that we can live comfortably, so that we can have access to medical care and material prosperity and the food that we need. Going back to that is simply unthinkable.
Alex Newman, our guest here today, we're talking about C40. I mean, it's cities succumbing to climate change hysteria. And friends, when we come back from the break, we're going to find out who is the chair of C40. Very interesting information coming forth. Stay with us. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, popular creation speaker and author with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, now some people say that they don't believe in God because they can't see him. Is this a legitimate argument?
No, I don't think it is, Chris. Now, it does take faith to believe in God, but we see all sorts of evidence of him. We see the results of what he has done. We see many truths in the Bible verified by science and history and thus have a good reason to have faith in the rest. Chris, it amuses me to see so many people believing in aliens. We've never seen an alien. We've searched the heavens with fine detail and can find no clue that anything is out there, but they'll believe in aliens before they believe in God. Life is so complex that it must have been created, and that's the back to Genesis truth.
Thank you, Dr. John. For more information on the foundational principles set forth in Genesis, visit us on the web at www.icr.org. That's www.icr.org.
Oh, folks, they tout C40, you know, take actions to create a sustainable future for everyone, everywhere. Matter of fact, they held the Mayor's Summit in Buenos Aires in 2022. Alex Newman is our guest here today. He is a senior editor for The New American, the website thenewamerican.com. And Alex, this is one of the issues New American has covered.
Yes, we've been covering the climate issue for a very long time. In fact, long before I came to The New American, and fresh out of college when I signed on with The New American and became a freelancer for them, I started going around the world covering these climate summits. The first one I went to, this was a year after I graduated, was the COP15 in Copenhagen, Denmark. And I've been going to almost every one since then. So I've had kind of a front row seat to see what is going on at these events. And I'll tell you what, there's a very good reason why they don't report these things in the American press. If Americans knew what goes on and what is said at these events, there is no way this would continue.
So this is made up of various mayors. Who chairs C40?
Well, the previous chair was Mayor Michael Bloomberg. He was, of course, the mayor of New York, one of the richest men in the world. He's worth, depending on what day, somewhere between $50 and $80 billion. He's got a fleet of private jets and helicopters. He's got unbelievable mansions all over the world. He's got just an unbelievable carbon footprint. So that's a perfect guy to lead the effort to save the climate from CO2 emissions. The current leader is actually the Islamic mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, who, of course, has repeatedly expressed totalitarian sentiments, not just on climate change, but many other issues, and who, of course, is overseeing the destruction of the once great city of London.
So what's interesting, Alex, and I wonder, how can these elites even sleep at night when they are such living in such luxury? You talked about these private mansions and their carbon footprint that probably is equivalent to some U.S. cities. And yet they are giving this global climate scare as if, you know, the sky is falling in this regard. How can they sleep at night when they are users of all the things they condemn?
Well, I think it's very simple, Jim. They don't believe this themselves. Right? And I think you can prove that multiple ways. One of the ways you can prove that is that they are just so careless with this. I mean, like I said, I've been going to these climate summits, and one of the things that stands out to you every time you land in one of these cities is, wow, there's private jets parked everywhere. I mean, there's no space left at the airport. It's full of private jets with celebrities, with politicians, with billionaires coming to lecture us about how we need to stop eating so much and stop driving our cars and heating our homes in the winter. It truly is obscene in the most true sense of the word. Another way that you can show that they don't believe this is because of what they're doing. And you and I have talked about this briefly on the show before, Jim, in the context of China. But I was in Paris at the UN summit where they came up with the Paris Agreement. And this is when it suddenly clicked in my mind what was happening here. The U.S. government, under the leadership of Barack Obama, agreed to slash CO2 emissions in the United States by almost 30% within a period of 10 years. And he said he was going to do that through executive orders, regulations, all the rest of it. Well, he followed through on that. The communist Chinese, on the other hand, who were already emitting drastically more CO2 than the United States, agreed to keep increasing their CO2 emissions until maybe 2030. You know, we'll see what happens when we get to 2030. Now, that's very interesting to have people celebrating this. It's very simple to demonstrate that a unit of economic output in the United States produces drastically less CO2 emissions than that very same unit of economic production in communist China does. That's because American power plants emit far less CO2. Many of them are powered by natural gas. We've got nuclear power. In China, the vast majority of their power is coming from coal-fired power plants. Incidentally, very dirty coal-fired power plants that truly do emit pollution, not just CO2, which is not pollution, it's plant food, but actual dirty, disgusting chemicals that get so bad you can't even go out of your house some days in the big cities. So how anybody could think that we're going to save the climate by shutting down clean American industries and factories and shipping them over to communist China is totally preposterous. And yet these people were all slapping each other on the back and giving each other high fives like this was some sort of great move for the climate. Nothing could be further from the truth. If you truly believe CO2 is pollution and it's bad for the planet, the worst thing you could possibly do is shut down industries and factories in the United States and move them over to China. And yet that's exactly what they were doing, and they were congratulating themselves for it.
And what's so interesting and ridiculous at the same time, Alex, is I'm looking at one of the articles that's on the C40 website, and here's the headline. This was August 25, 2023, China's Energy Transition, a look at key cities. And they're looking at different cities in China and the progress we're making. But as part of the country's plan to reduce net zero by 2060 is how this article starts, by the year 2060. Now, everybody else is making plans for 2030. What is it? The UK banning the sale of all gas-powered vehicles by 2030 and then plan to get rid of them by 2035. We've got New York City Mayor Eric Adams announcing, you know, placing caps on the amount of meat and dairy served by city institutions like schools and prisons. We have all these actions being taken, and somehow yet we're applauding China because by 2060 they're trying to, you know, get down their to net zero emissions.
It is truly laughable, Jim, or it would be laughable if it wasn't so deadly serious. What they are doing here is they are hollowing out American industry and the American economy, which, of course, has obvious national security implications. You can't support a proper military defense if you don't have an economy to pay for it, right? So this is absolutely preposterous. And anybody who lived through the Cold War, now I was born right at the end of the Cold War, but anybody who lived through the Cold War knows very well that you cannot trust a communist promise as far as you can throw it, right? The Soviets would say, oh, we promised to do this, and then they turn around, stick a knife in your back, and do exactly the opposite. It's exactly the same thing that the communist Chinese are doing with the help of the Biden administration and the Obama administration before it.
Alex Newman is our guest here today. Alex, I'd like to go back to a few years ago, just the World Economic Forum. I mean, didn't they say you'll own nothing and you'll be happy? I mean, I'm looking here at the C40 annual report for 2022, and they state, quote, C40 cities are delivering climate action that not only cuts emissions and reduces climate risk, but also improves the quality of life enjoyed by all our residents. I'm sorry, but whose quality of life are they improving? And it goes back to World Economic Forum. You'll own nothing and you're going to be happy.
That's exactly right, Jim. And one of the nifty tricks that the World Economic Forum and the UN are working on right now is redefining well-being. You know, typically we would measure well-being in terms of economic growth and prosperity. You know, what is the GDP per capita? Do people have enough money to buy houses and food and the things that they need to survive? Well, they're redefining that now to, you know, clean environment. Clean environment, of course, as defined by them, right? Again, with the false presupposition that CO2 is pollution. So they're actually working on a radical redefinition of well-being, where if you're dirt poor and you can't even feed yourself, but hey, there's not a lot of CO2 coming out of your city, then wow, you must have really high well-being, right? Whereas material prosperity, which traditionally has been indicated through things like GDP, GDP per capita, economic production, average income, things like that, that's all going away. So what they're doing is that they're trying to redefine this here in a way that makes very poor, very filthy, very undeveloped nations look very good on paper while making prosperous places look bad. It's a very, very dangerous scam that they're running. And, of course, their end objectives have been revealed multiple times. The UN said early on in this whole climate scam, back in the 1970s when they first met in Canada, they came out with a declaration that said, among other things, we have to get rid of private land ownership. In the intervening years, they've said we got to drastically reduce the population on the planet to save us from global warming. So if you really want to understand, folks, where all this is going, where these policies are coming from, just take everything that the Bible teaches, flip it exactly upside down. God ordained property rights. They want to eliminate property rights, right? God said, thou shalt not steal. In other words, it's implied that you have a right to property, you have a right to the fruits of your labor. God said, thou shalt not murder. Well, they believe that there's too many of us on this planet, and so euthanasia and abortion and whatever other means are necessary to bring down the population, it's for the greater good. And so on every single level, they're waging war on what God has ordained. And, of course, the fruit, we're starting to see it now. We've seen it in other nations that have already adopted these kind of policies. It's absolute misery and absolute horror.
Alex, describe for us what a net zero future looks like.
Well, net zero is this idea that we're going to reduce net emissions, not just of CO2, but also of other gases that they don't like, which, of course, are essential to civilization, to absolutely zero. And they have done their own little formulas. In fact, Bill Gates came up with a famous formula that he talked about in a TED Talk a little over a decade ago, where he put these different letters on there. One was population, yep. One was CO2 emissions per person. And he says, one of these numbers has got to get down to zero for us to be able to have net zero, right? And he wasn't using that term back then. It's more modern, but the idea was the same. And so he actually then, right after that, gets into a discussion of population control. He says, we do a really good job with vaccines and reproductive health care, which is code word for abortion and contraception. We do a really good job with vaccines, abortions, and contraceptions. Maybe we can reduce that population by 15%. That gives you some sense of how maniacal this agenda is. But they want to reduce these emissions to net zero. And, of course, we all know this is impossible. They know that's impossible. But to create some unattainable goal like that, they think then would give them a blank check to do anything and everything under the guise of getting us to that goal. And so what that means functionally is, and this applies really to the Western world, not so much to China. China will continue increasing its emissions until it dominates the planet with help from Washington, London, New York, et cetera. But what that means in practical terms is a whole lot less prosperity, a whole lot less energy, a whole lot less people, and a whole lot less freedom all across the United States, Canada, Japan, Europe, Australia, New Zealand, Latin America. And that's the direction we're moving.
I regularly hear the promise of all these new jobs that are going to be created with this green energy, all the new initiatives. But Alexander, they're also very careful not to admit how many jobs they will destroy by going this direction.
That's right. And this is a very simple thing to understand, right? If the government taxes everybody to 90% and then uses that money to have people smash big rocks into little rocks, we're creating a lot of jobs, smashing big rocks into little rocks. The question is that useful? And the answer is obviously no, that's not useful at all. In fact, that's an enormous waste of the people's labor and of our scarce resources. Instead of doing something productive that will help feed, clothe, house, and shelter people, it contributes to just literally wasting all of that productive energy and effort. And so that's what they're doing here. They're taxing the productive part of the economy, the people who feed us and clothe us and bring food to the grocery store. They're taxing these productive industries and individuals to the hilt, to the point where many of them can't survive anymore. Meanwhile, they're diverting the productive energy that they're extracting from us with these oppressive and confiscatory taxes. They're diverting it into things that are totally ridiculous, like buying silly solar panels and windmills from communist Chinese companies that are producing them in factories fueled by coal. You can't make this stuff up because it's so ridiculous, but it is exactly what's happening.
And I'm convinced, Alex, this is just taking, you know, the same old thing, but putting a new wrap around it. But this is really just another road to see the Agenda 2030 implemented, is it not?
That's exactly what it is, Jim. And so that's what people need to understand, too. The climate agenda, whether we're looking at the city, state, or federal level, it's one component of a much broader agenda. They have Agenda 2030 is the kind of 15-year plan from 2015 to 2030. Now, the head of the UN General Assembly, when they were debating this, referred to this as the master plan for humanity. And it does deal very extensively with so-called climate change. In fact, the hypothesis that man's emissions of CO2 are driving climate change underpins many of the 17 sustainable development goals that make up Agenda 2030. But this involves every area of our lives.
Friends, we'll be back in 1 minute. Alex Newman with us, and we'll be looking at a couple more things here as well, like green finance. What exactly is that, and how can one stand against this? You got whole cities around the world that are engaged. How do you take a stand against it? Back in 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Muslims continually claim that Islam is a loving and peaceful religion. They also insist that violence is committed by only a few radicals who misunderstand the teaching of Muhammad, which are found in the Quran and in the Hadith. But is this true? The Violent Truth About Islam is a 24-page booklet that examines such claims, along with dozens of passages from the Quran and statements from the Hadith and Muslim scholars. What is the cause of violence and terror in Islam? This booklet will leave no doubt about Islam's long history of intolerance and bloodshed arising from the very words in the Quran and from the example of Muhammad's life and teachings. One copy of this booklet is available for a donation of $2, 5 copies for $9, or 10 copies for a donation of $12. Call 1-800-729-9829.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. With us today, we have Alex Newman, and Alex is senior editor for The New American, the website thenewamerican.com, thenewamerican.com. And we're talking about cities from around the world that are engaging in this C40 initiative. Okay, if our country or our cities are not there, our country is not going to participate in the Paris Accord, or this is what we are going to be doing as a city itself. And Alex, again, just to highlight, there are a number of cities around the world, but highlight again some of those that are right here in the United States that are engaging in this.
Yeah, a lot of our biggest cities in the United States are part of this, San Francisco, New York, Chicago, Philadelphia, Miami. Really, a lot of our biggest and most prosperous cities are unfortunately getting on board with this. But again, this is happening without the knowledge and without the consent of the constituents of these cities. And so, you know, if you live in one of these cities, folks, I highly recommend that you put in a phone call to your city councilman, to your mayor, and see about getting a meeting, because this stuff is very, very nefarious. And, you know, right now it's primarily in the bigger cities across the United States, but there are other mechanisms like ICLEI, used to be called the International Council of Local Environmental Initiatives. They roped in like 800 American cities until they started being exposed, and that's when people started going to their city council meetings and saying, hey, why are we involved in this? And then ICLEI had to take down the list of American cities because cities were dropping out so quickly. So we can push back against this. You can go to the C40 website and find out if your city is listed as one of the participating cities. And if it is, definitely make a call to your local city councilman. Let them know that you want something done about this.
I see Phoenix. We've got a lot of listeners in Phoenix. That is listed in the list of cities. And as you mentioned, the major cities here across the United States, there is a term used in all this called green finance. What exactly is green finance?
Well, green finance is a broad term. It covers a lot of areas, but I think the simplest way to think of it is just a scam. It's a fraud, right? Under normal understandings of finance, finance is a way to put capital to productive use so that everybody can benefit. So if I have some savings, I can invest that, and we can finance, say, you know, corporate expansion, research and development, even government bonds, right? Could be part of finance. And the understanding then is that I'm going to earn a profit by investing my money, by financing whether a corporate enterprise or even a government. Green finance is very different. So they try to keep the profit motive in there, but they're only able to do that through very grotesque distortions of the market. Probably the best example of this is carbon credits. It is a scam through and through. But what they're saying is CO2 is bad, CO2 is pollution, and so what we're going to do is we're going to issue carbon credits. Now, a lot of governments and jurisdictions have made this mandatory, thankfully not yet in the United States. They do hope to eventually get a global cap and trade system where you will have to buy carbon credits. But what they do, and I've been writing about this for over a decade, I'll give you an example. So there were some companies that were issuing carbon credits, selling carbon credits to European companies that needed to offset their emissions to comply with the EU. And what they were doing, they were evicting cities and villages in Africa, removing these people by force, and then planting trees where these villages were and saying, look, there's trees now, and trees absorb CO2. So now we can sell carbon credits to these companies in Europe that are being obligated by authorities to buy these silly carbon credits. It's a scam. It produces zero wealth. And unfortunately, it's even worse than that. It takes CO2 out of the atmosphere if they're legitimate carbon credits, and that, of course, is not what we want. I interviewed Trump's climate advisor several times over the years, and consistently what he tells me, and many other climate scientists and experts that I've interviewed, they say the Earth is starving for more CO2 right now. In fact, we're at historically very, very low levels of CO2 in the atmosphere. That's why a lot of farmers pump CO2 into their greenhouses. Dr. Will Happer, Trump's climate advisor, he's a physics professor at Princeton University. He said, and I thought these were very interesting words for a physicist from Princeton, he said, said plants are designed to live in an atmosphere with 4 to 5 times as much CO2 as we have right now. So if you hate humanity and you hate the planet and you hate the forests and you hate agriculture, then by all means, let's get CO2 out of the atmosphere through green finance. But if you think that's all silly, well, we got a problem.
You know, this problem seems so huge, and cities from all over the world and some major cities here in the U.S. And Alex, we got people living in rural America, so certainly people in some of the larger metro areas as well. How can we stand against this? How can we fight this, you know, what's going on? How can we say, no, I object to this? Can we do anything meaningful?
There's a lot that we can do, you know, and I would say it begins by educating ourselves. When you go into your city councilman's office or your county commissioner's office, you want to understand this stuff very, very well. So I would recommend brushing up on your climate knowledge, brushing up on your science. You know, one of the things that I've done several times, Jim, because I know not everybody has time to really study the science in depth, and I don't blame them. You know, we all have jobs, we all have families to feed. One of the things that I've done repeatedly is go back through the predictions that the UN, that the climate scientists have been making for the last 40 or 50 years to find out how they turned out. And what I have found is that in virtually every case where they have made a falsifiable prediction, in other words, a prediction that you could prove either correct or incorrect, because they said, you know, by 2010, X will happen. Well, 2010 came and went. Did what they predicted happen? The answer in virtually every case that I could find was no. In many cases, exactly the opposite happened. So you don't have to be a scientist to understand that when they're making all these predictions and the predictions are not coming true, we're being, at the very least, manipulated. We're being deceived here. But when you actually do the odds, when you look at the probabilities of this, what you'll find very quickly is that this cannot be an accident. There's a deliberate effort to deceive here. And again, through the laws of probability, if these people were just making honest but misguided predictions, every once in a while they'd get some right. But instead, what we see is a continuous effort at deception. So get this knowledge in your mind. Go share it with your elected officials, share it with members of your community, go speak out at city council meetings, county commission meetings, talk to your state legislator, your state rep, your state senator, contact your congressman. Right now, Republicans hold control of the House of Representatives. All appropriations have to come from the House of Representatives. So Republicans in Congress right this moment could shut all of this down, Jim, and I mean all of it. When they pass a spending bill, none of this money may be authorized or used by the EPA to pursue climate initiatives. None of this money may be used to fund John Kerry's special climate envoy and his trips around the world in his private jets. None of this money may be used to fund any UN agencies that are working on climate shenanigans. None of this money may be used to fund city governments that are doing climate silliness in response to the Inflation Reduction Act. So there's a lot that can be done, Jim. The question is, you know, will our elected officials listen, and will enough Americans get involved in time?
Does the Senate have to ratify that as well, or does the House have that sole control?
All appropriations have to come from the House. So there's nothing that the Senate can do. If the House does not send over a bill with money in it, there's nothing that the Senate or Joe Biden can do about it. And we've seen this movie before, Jim. I mean, we saw it not too long ago with Planned Parenthood, right? In theory, the House has all the power, but what happens is the Senate and the President and the media will team up and say that Republicans are being terrorists, they're being insurrectionists, they want little children to starve, they want single moms to be homeless, they don't want our troops to get paid. And so what they'll do is they'll say, we won't approve any budget unless it includes money for, you know, climate priorities, abortions, Planned Parenthood, etc. And almost every time the Republicans cave, what we need now is for the Republicans to hold the line, let the media call them names, but stand firm.
Friends, our phone number to Crosstalk today, 800-733-9829. I'd like to take your questions for Alex today or brief comments, 800-733-9829, our number to Crosstalk. Alex, I see they met last year, and it looks like looking at some of their past presidents, they have just a couple-year term. Do they have any planned meetings that we're aware of at this point, C40?
Not that I know of. They're having smaller meetings. They actually just had one in Africa where they brought a bunch of African mayors together. So they're having smaller meetings. I don't know whether they're having any global meetings anytime soon, but typically these guys all show up and hobnob at the UN climate summit. So the next one is going to be coming up in just a few months now in Dubai. I'm going to do everything possible to be there. And, of course, I'll be putting out updates through thenewamerican.com. And if you'd like me to come on and share, I'd be happy to.
Sure.
But
that'll
be in a few months. And I'm sure a lot of these mayors and a lot of representatives of C40 will be there.
Let's go to the phone lines again. Our number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. We begin with Edward in Wisconsin. Edward, you're on the air.
Hi, Jim.
Hi.
Sorry, I haven't been able to volunteer for ECY this year, but I've been busy. I want to address the issue about climate change. Basically, you can easily show that carbon dioxide is not causing global warming if you just go by the radiative forcing equation that's there, just the basic equation itself. You can show that there really is not a greenhouse gas effect using the radiative forcing equation.
Okay.
And part of the problem is when dealing with a log within the equation, they're using the ice core data as the standard value for carbon dioxide, and they can't use it as a standard. You have no standard to go by.
Great.
So that's the way to show that there really is no global warming happening.
Thank you, Edward. And Alex, I know you have studied this issue long and hard.
Yes, I have. And actually, there's been a lot of papers that have been released debunking this, and there are things that even non-scientists can look at and understand this. I'll give you a very clear example. There was about a 26 or 27-year, quote-unquote, pause in global warming that ran until about 2015 or so. This completely undermined every single one of the climate models that were being used to predict these disastrous future temperature increases and things like this. And so what you had was the 73 UN predictions. They had these computer models and simulations. Every single one of them predicted massive and accelerated warming as CO2 concentrations in the atmosphere increased. What we actually observed, which is really the essence of science, coming up with a hypothesis, comparing it with the observations that you make, what we actually observed through the satellite data and through the weather balloon data was a complete flatlining, which completely contradicted the theory. Now, the U.S. State Department, we know, actually pressured the IPCC, the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, to put in its updated report the argument that the ocean ate the global warming, right, as a simplistic way of saying it. They wanted to argue, and there was no proof or evidence of this, but they wanted to say that, well, it really did heat up, but that heat was all hiding somewhere deep in the oceans where nobody could find it, right? The ocean ate my global warming, in other words. But you can show using some very, very simple tools where you don't have to understand equations or physics or the climate. Nobody really understands the climate except God, but you can show very simply that the hypothesis that human emissions of CO2 are causing global warming is false. And I'll just remind people, human emissions of CO2, even if you accept the greenhouse theory, and there are papers published that cause serious reasons to doubt it, but even if you accept the greenhouse theory, human emissions of CO2 make up a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of 1% of all the greenhouse gases naturally in the atmosphere. And I'll mention one more paper. I actually published an in-depth article about this about a year ago. This was published by Dr. Willie Soon, a climatologist for Harvard Smithsonian, and about 25 other scientists from around the world. It was published in a very prestigious journal. And what they did was they compared the observed increases in temperature over the last few decades with the solar data, the TSI, total solar irradiance data captured by NASA. And what they found was every scintilla of warming that had been observed could be explained merely through changes in solar activity. This paper has not been refuted. It has not been challenged. It continues to stand as a damning indictment of the UN's so-called climate science, and yet nobody wants to talk about it.
It's amazing, folks. Hey, we're up against a break. We'll be back with more of your calls. Alex Newman, our guest today, senior editor for The New American, their website, thenewamerican.com. You can also check out his personal site, libertysentinel.org. Back in 1 minute, you're listening to Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. This week, America remembered the 22nd anniversary of the tragedy of 9/11/2001, where nearly 3,000 Americans lost their lives. So what has happened in America since that day? Islam has gained a bigger footprint in America. Islam, which we were told was responsible for the terrorist attack with these Saudi hijackers, they have more religious liberty in America now and liberties, period, than the average Christian conservative constitutionalist and patriot. In fact, our own government under the Department of Homeland Security has labeled those who are opposed to government restrictions related to COVID as potential domestic terrorists. The narrative has indeed been flipped. Islam is wide open to take over, and Christians, they're to lose their liberty and freedoms and be classified as domestic terrorists. Who would have ever thought it?
Friends, we've got cities around the world, including right here in the United States, that are succumbing to the climate change hysteria. If the country doesn't act, we will. And so they're signing up their communities engaged in this hysteria and really seeking to foist upon their citizens the very tenets of this. I mean, when you look at the restraints that they're wanting to put on American cities and put on the cities that are involved in this, like reducing, and I will just go through this list again, reducing calorie consumption to 2,500 calories a day, can't fly more than one time every 3 years, eliminating private car ownership from fossil fuel to electric, eliminating each person to 3 new items of clothing per year, reducing use of raw materials in construction and infrastructure by 20 to 90%. One of your colleagues, Rebecca Terrell, has written on this at thenewamerican.com, Alex, and points out many of these things.
Yep. And I encourage people to go read that article by Rebecca. It's available at thenewamerican.com. You know, without just trying to toot our own horn, I do believe that the New American magazine has been by far the best source of information on this. For many years, our articles were all at the top of Google because they used a neutral algorithm that was just based on how many people are reading it, how many people are linking to it. And so you would Google any of these questions and the New American's articles would come up. Well, the UN actually formed an official partnership with Google now to suppress our information and to peddle their dishonest propaganda. And this was formally announced just last year at the World Economic Forum. And so now it becomes very difficult to find our work. But if you go to thenewamerican.com, we've been covering this, again, for decades. I don't believe anybody has done as good a job as my colleagues at The New American in exposing this agenda. And, of course, we actually go to these meetings, right? We're not just following AP and Reuters reports. We're actually going to these things and getting the information that they don't want you to have.
Randy is next in Grafton, West Virginia. Randy, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a couple statements. First of all, I'm repeating what I've said before, but I believe the policies for this green agenda that are happening now will be a precursor to the things that will cause the environmental problems and the starvation and famine and diseases during the Great Tribulation. Also, too, the people who are pushing this agenda have a lot to gain in the way of power, money, and wealth because of who they are and their positions. But these people are also have an occult, pagan, New Age worldview. Many of them are Luciferians. Some of them are Satanists. But they're all united in that they believe the lies of the devil in the Garden of Eden, and this is what this is really all about.
Okay.
Man is God having his way.
Thank you, Randy. Alex, your comment.
Yeah, I appreciate the call very much. And, you know, it's something that's uncomfortable for a lot of people, not a lot of people want to talk about. But, in fact, the Bible teaches very, very clearly that, you know, what we're dealing with in this world is satanic, right? Jesus Christ actually says in Luke chapter 11, and he's quoted in Matthew chapter 12 as well, that whoever's not with me is against me. In other words, there's no neutral territory here. If you're not with Christ, you are against Christ. And then, you know, these doctrines come through very clear. If you go to 2 Corinthians chapter 4, you read Satan referred to as the God of this world.
Mm-hmm.
1 John chapter 5, you read that we know that we are from God, but the whole world lies in the power of the evil one. And so this is something that Scripture teaches very clearly. Satan is running around this planet like a lion seeking whom he may devour. He has enlisted a lot of very powerful people. This is not a new phenomenon. In fact, 3,000 years ago, David wrote in Psalm 2 that the kings of the earth, the rulers, were conspiring together or taking counsel together against the Lord and his anointed one. And so that's the reality. While we're in this fallen world, you know, we as Christians who have put our faith and our trust and our confidence in Christ, we are not under Satan's jurisdiction.
Right, right.
But the people who are following him, you know, even if they don't know consciously that they're following him, and many of them do, as the caller suggested, but if you're worshiping money, if you're worshiping yourself, if you're worshiping a false god, a statue, a rock, you're following Satan. And that's the reality of the world as the Bible explains it. And, of course, it's confirmed by all of our observations.
Joseph in Sussex, you're on the air.
Hello, Alex. It's been about a year since we last spoke. Thank you again for your work. You used a time-tested phrase earlier that you can always trust a communist to be a communist. In light of that, and related to the topic today, I'd like to know your opinion about this thing called a special operation in what used to be known as Eastern Ukraine. Do you see any of the elements of a just war there? I'm sure you're
familiar. Yeah, and I don't want to get too far off in Ukraine right now, Joseph. I mean, we're not. I know that's another topic, another day, but that's really not where we're going with the program here today. So I don't want to get diverted here at this point. We got Mary next in West Des Moines, Iowa. You're on the air.
Me, Mary?
Yes, Mary. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Alex. And what was Dr. Patrick's last name before I ask my next question? I think he's from Canada and originally founded Green East.
Dr. Patrick Moore.
Dr. Patrick Moore.
M-O-R-E?
M-O-O-R-E, yep.
Okay, thank you. Well, I've been encouraged in the last 2 weeks. I can't give you the name, but there have been several papers that have shown up on my changing screen on my computer that are challenging the climate change, you know, in different ways.
Yeah, we're working on articles right now about them. There's a trio of new papers that have just dropped in three very prestigious journals. I'm working on those right now. There's about 30-something scientists involved, including Dr. Patrick Moore and also Dr. Willie Soon, who I mentioned earlier. These are groundbreaking papers, and the only response from the climate establishment so far has been to throw out childish name-calling at these scientists. That's going to be actually the focus of my article. So thank you for bringing that up. This is very important.
Mary, thank you for the call. We're going to squeeze one last call in. James in Tomo, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. I was looking around previously on YouTube and other platforms and had observed a couple of sites, and I don't remember the gentleman that was posting them, but they were about how the climate change extremists take the absolute worst case scenario plus a little bit more that's used to say this is how bad it could get. And they're using that as the baseline for their predictions of the environment. He was demonstrating that this is why their predictions don't come true.
James, I'm sorry I have to cut you there. Alex, we're down to 30 seconds. Your response.
Yeah, they've been doing that consistently. In fact, in 2003, the U.S. Department of Defense put out a ludicrous report claiming that Britain would be Siberian within 10 years, California would be flooded with inland seas, the Netherlands would be unlivable. It's totally ludicrous. But all of their projections are ludicrous. So I would encourage folks to get familiar with this stuff, get involved, and get on your knees and pray, because we are facing a full-on assault by the enemy.
Indeed. Thank you, James, for the call. And sorry we had to cut you short there, friends. A lot of information. You can check out more at thenewamerican.com. Alex, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, Jim.
And friends, thanks for joining us on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.